back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively getting into baseball, and more than anything, we're going to put this football thing away at the end of the week, you know, pending no injuries and all that, and Luke can focus on his first passion, which is the Baltimore Orioles. Luke Jones joins us now. You can follow him at Baltimore Luke out on the Instagrams and the Twitters and the LinkedIns, and certainly on our Facebook page as well, as he does double duty this week, afternoons with the Ravens and evenings with Oriole baseball. And certainly this group of players and this young crop of players, and whether it's the Baltimore on the front of the jersey or the black jerseys, or I see kids wanting a jersey, right? Like in the days, what was it? Are you going to be Kyle Bowler? You're going to be Terrell Suggs? You're going to have a Ray Lewis? You're going to have a John Ogden? Certainly the Adley Rutschman thing is there. And you would say that Cowser's coming and Holiday's coming, and they have the Rodriguez. They have all these guys coming. But Gunnar Henderson over the weekend made at least people consider getting one of his jerseys. And I watched some baseball over the weekend with a guy who played some baseball, and he's more bullish on Henderson than he is on Rutschman in some way. And I found that to be kind of an interesting statement of where will they be in 12 years? Well, you know, I don't know if you would have measured Matt Wieters versus Nick Markakis. I guess back in the day, and say who would have numbers, who would make the most money, whatever. Certainly Gunnar Henderson, younger, and we forget that. And I know you're always bringing up how young he is. He brought up how young he is, but did something on Sunday that my neck still hurts from watching that thing crank up.
That was a mammoth shot. It really was. And I say that having seen the home run that Shohei Ohtani hit in Baltimore a few weeks ago that almost landed in Boog's Barbecue out in right center field. So I've seen plenty of impressive home runs at Camden Yards. And to rank them, I can't say that Gunnar Henderson's shot on Sunday was the most impressive, but it was certainly one of the more impressive ones I've seen at Camden Yards. I mean, 462 feet. I think the exit velo was 113.8 miles per hour. I mean, he clobbered that ball. So, and me being the Marvel nerd that I am, Nestor, they handed out the Adley Rutschman Captain America bobblehead on Saturday. That was a Thor-like blast from Gunnar Henderson on Sunday. But, I mean, he's been terrific, and we talked so much over the first 6-7 weeks of the season about his struggles. I'll give you the numbers here. I have them in front of me right now, Nestor. So on May 13th, so we're talking a month ago, literally a month ago at this point, Gunnar Henderson was batting 170, you know, not 198, not 204, 170. And there were lots and lots of people.
Is there a name for something under 175 that's like worse than Mendoza? Is that Davis? What is that? What do we call that?
I was just going to say it might be the Chris Davis line. I mean, I'm not trying to pick on the former Oriole, but
I mean, Mendoza is so last century. When you're in the big leagues hitting the .170 and they're giving you the bat and saying, here, take it 4 or 5 times today instead of sending you somewhere else, it is, I mean, it's validating to some degree to say who he is and what he did, but they didn't waste any time sending Rodriguez's ass out of here, right? Like, they sent Palmer back. A lot of guys got sent back over the course of time. Henderson kind of, you know, hung in and rode the wave around Preakness time, right?
Well, you have that. And, you know, it is a little bit different when you're talking about a starting pitcher. You know, when you get knocked out of a game early, I mean, that compromises your bullpen, not just for the rest of that game, but for the next few days. So it is a little more complicated with a pitcher. But the thing that I kept talking about was what, Nestor? He was batting 170. What was the but that I kept
he was making hard contact?
Well, not just that, but at that point in time, he still had a .341 on base percentage. So he was still finding ways to contribute, even though the batting average was ugly as could be. He was still getting on base. And we know how important that is. And that's a money ball thing, but it's not just a money ball thing. That was an Earl Weaver thing back in the day. Earl didn't want to bunt. Earl wanted to play. For the big inning, he wanted to play guys getting on base.
You also look under the R and see how many times he's scored because he's gotten on. And that's in this offense. That's what this is about, right?
Exactly. So my point wasn't that a 170 batting average was okay. The point that I was making there was this is a kid that is still finding ways to contribute, even though he is struggling when he's swinging the bat. He was striking out a lot and he was struggling. You know, you're batting 170. There's no way to sugarcoat that. It's rough. However, since then, so we're talking roughly a month since then, you're talking about someone who's batted over the last month, 321, 361 on base percentage. So he's not walking quite as much. What's that telling you? He's being a little more aggressive in the count. I think young hitters who have a great command of the strike zone, while it bodes well for their long-term game, their long-term prosperity, I think they can get into a habit of maybe they're a little too selective and they're letting some good pitches go by. And then you get yourself into some unfriendly counts. And that puts the pitcher, especially in this day and age, when you have guys who throw so hard, guys who have such good breaking stuff, really puts you at a disadvantage. And I think Gunnar was kind of having some of that, some of those problems. And I think when Adley Rutschman runs into some issues, even though they've been, you know, not as dramatic, I think there are times where he could probably stand to be a little more aggressive at times. You love the plate discipline, but at times it does behoove you to swing early in the count because the best pitch you might get might be the first one. So we've seen a different approach from Gunnar Henderson in that regard. So you know, he's put up 1,000 OPS over the last month, 6 home runs, 5 doubles, 14 RBIs. As I mentioned, 5 walks over that time. So not as many walks for the short term, but we've seen him hit the ball with such authority. And you know,
it's hard to walk when you go 3 for 5.
Sure, exactly. And look, I love walks, but I love extra base hits a lot more than that. Let's be clear, you know, as a money.
So does the guy with the goggles out in left field.
No question. So to see him, what he's done, to see what he did in San Francisco, remember he hit the big home run on the Friday night against the Giants, first game of that series, to see him do what he did in the finale against Milwaukee. And then
he's won a couple games for them since the last time you and I got together, literally.
Absolutely. So for him to do that, it's a reminder of the talent that's there and a reminder of, and it's interesting you mentioned the conversation you had over the weekend. I mean, if you ask me who's going to be a better player a decade now, the next 5 years, that's a different discussion. But a decade from now, well, Gunnar Henderson's younger. He's 4 years younger than Adley Rutschman, and he plays while. And let's be clear, we could see him at shortstop, and we'll get to that in a moment because I do want to talk about Jorge Mateo. But the idea that he is an infielder as opposed to a catcher lends itself to aging more gracefully as well. So the point is, and even without comparing the two, Gunnar Henderson has a bright future, and we're seeing this. And look, he's going to have some more times where he struggles, right? He does have swing and miss to his game. He's going to strike out, as so many hitters do in this day.
But when he makes contact, I mean, the thing I was referring to is back. He struggled the first couple weeks of the season, and we were like, hit the ball hard, he hit the ball hard, he hit the ball hard. And it was cold out, like all, you know, all of that April stuff. But I looked up at one point. I remember he's hitting like 201 in late April. And I said to you, I'm like, is he going to make it? You know what I mean? Like, and then it got worse. We didn't talk a lot about it because they were winning. but then it got worse. And I the kid's 20 years old, right? I mean, it's crazy.
He'll be 22 at the end of this month. So he'll just have turned 22. And I had to laugh. And I shared this on Facebook. I shared this on Twitter as well, at WNST. But he was asked in the post game if that 462-foot home run, which, by the way, and I don't put too much stock into this because StatCast has given us a much more sophisticated way of estimating home runs. Compared to back in the day where they used landmarks and
they use the eyeball test
after a game or whatever. Right. I mean, so it was a much, you know, a much less precise science at that point in time.
Ask but anybody alive who saw the Frank Robinson home run in 67, right? Like literally.
Exactly. But that was the longest recorded distance for a ball to land on Utah Street. I mean, that was a one hopper off the warehouse that reminded me of the Jim Tomey homer off Messina, I think back in 96, I think it was, where, you know, kind of hit it a little more towards right center, and it was a one hopper off the warehouse. I mean, that's how impressive
it almost
was.
Looks like a golf ball, but when they hit it like
Gunnar
that.
Henderson. Yeah. Oh, no question. But Gunnar Henderson was asked in the postgame clubhouse if that was about as far as he could hit a ball. And this is where he reminds you that, hey, he's only 21. He's almost 22. He said, when I get that man strength in a few years, maybe I'll be able to hit it a little bit farther, which I thought, well, I'm 39. I'm still waiting for my man strength. But that's neither here nor there. But he's an impressive kid. And to see him do what he's done after – the way that he had struggled early in the season. And let's face it, he was struggling defensively as well. You know, he had some hiccups defensively to the point where, you know, early in the year, they were moving him between third base and shortstop. And And they kind of they knocked that off. They let him focus on third base for a while. So, but what's been interesting is his dramatic, I don't even want to say improvement, just adjustments, you know, just playing better. I think we saw last year that the kid was capable of doing this and hitting for the power that he's been hitting with here of late. But, you know, of late, we've seen him, one, hit some in the leadoff role over the weekend, which I thought was interesting. Again, that on-base potential, that walk potential that he has. And two, we've seen him play a little bit of shortstop here of late, which this is where I transitioned to Jorge Mateo. And as great as Mateo was in April, I mean, my goodness, he was a top five player in the league in the month of April. Well, he has a 350 OPS since then. Not on-base percentage, not batting average. He has a 350 OPS since then. He's been batting 147 since May 1st. So with Henderson doing what he's done, with Mateo struggling to the degree that he has, and not, I'm not saying give up on Jorge Mateo right now, but at the same time, he's got to start swinging the bat better. Even with his defense, even with his speed, he's been unplayable. That's how bad he's been offensively, that it's been a struggle to play him. But you couple that with Ramon Urias swinging the bat better of late. You still have Jordan Westberg, who is doing everything he possibly can at Norfolk. I mean, go look at the numbers he's put up over the last calendar year at AAA. I mean, the guy's put up amazing numbers. He's doing everything you can everything you can to get a promotion. You consider all those factors, I wouldn't be shocked to see Gunnar Henderson continue to play some shortstop. I mean, he's not the amazing Gold Glove caliber defender at short that Mateo is, but he can defend there. I mean, he absolutely can. So if he's going to give you that kind of offense and Mateo's going to continue to struggle the way he has, I think it'll make things interesting here to see what they do, at least over the next few weeks. But, you know, to bring it back to what Henderson has done, I mean, this is why you have to be patient with young players. And this is the difference. And I don't mean this as a knock on Adley Rutschman. Adley Rutschman's 25. You know, he played college baseball. He played college baseball at an elite level. You know, he was the 1-1 pick. Gunnar Henderson was a high school kid. You know, he was the end of the first round, you know, kind of that sandwich pick guy. So for him to do what he's done, you see the upside, you see the age, you see how much better he's already getting. But I think he is also really a testament, and Mike Elias made this comment, I think it was last August when he said this, that Gunnar Henderson was really kind of the flagship guy for them as an organization, as a player development department. They developed this kid. You know, Adley Rutschman didn't need a whole lot of developing when the Orioles drafted him. He probably could have played the majors right there and then if he had to, if the Orioles weren't in a position where they didn't want to start his clock. You know, he probably could have played within a year in the majors, let's say at least. Gunnar needed some developing, but boy, it's come on quickly, and he has been so good. And really seeing him, not just the home run that he had on Sunday, which was such an impressive blast, but he's been doing it for a few weeks now, where hitting the ball with authority and just he's been one of their absolute best players these last few weeks. And, you know, as we mentioned, it's won them a couple games here over the last 10 days that they wouldn't have won without him.
Luke Jones is going to be doing all things Ravens, and you can follow him out at Baltimore Positive and out on social media as well, at Baltimore Luke, as well as all things Orioles. As we sort of we're about to put the Ravens away for a little bit. They'll come back out, and it'll be interesting to see where they are in August. I saw Roquan Smith down there trying to throw strikes off the mound, you know, crossing sports and whatnot, but the baseball momentum in this time of the year, to me, they're going to make their hay in these American League East games as far as how you measure them. Beating up the Royals is one thing, you know, and these opportunities come and they go. And I mentioned in a prior segment, if you look at the Orioles schedule, it's wacky against anything you would know the last 50 years of watching baseball in regard to the West Coast swings they're going to have in August and September, where they're not playing the Red Sox, the Yankees, and, you know, in the old days, it would be the Tigers because they were in the American League East, that you're seeing the same teams in September, that making up ground, it is not a real thing in September. It's a real thing when you're playing head-to-head because you play head-to-head so much less. And that would be true for the Blue Jays this week, that if they want to make up ground, they may want to take care of business against the upstart Orioles here this week. That this notion that the Orioles are full of all these young guys, These are now young guys doing things. Cedric Mullins, when he comes back, he's not a young guy anymore. He's a veteran 30-30 guy that's now in a pennant race for the first time in his life. Ditto to all of these guys, right? It's not, I was a 1-1. It's, hey, we're in a pennant race. Are we going to be better than the Yankees and the Red Sox and all of these pennants you had up on your wall when you were a kid 5 years ago? That the things that we've seen in the past, that this organization is going to make it through a summer. And not just with the players they have and the management they have, but whatever these targets are for Elias to say, I want that pitcher in my rotation in September, in addition to Wells or Gibson, or maybe it'll be Rodriguez. Or, you know, again, like football, there's only one ball. I mean, they don't need eight starting pitchers. Maybe they do. But it, once October comes around, they need four good ones. And they need a bullpen that's not overtaxed, all these things you're talking about. So setting things up when you're 17 games over 500, you start setting things up and saying, what do I want my team to look like in September? But more than that, beating these teams, these AL East teams, when you get a chance, two out of three, the old meatloaf line, right? But that's pretty much where the Orioles are right here. And they'll go on the road this week, play wacky games against the Cubs and stuff. But beating the AL East when you get that opportunity, it's a here and now issue. You don't want to go backwards in your own division.
No question about it. I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when they had the 5-1 road trip against Toronto and playing in the Bronx and how encouraging that was. But yeah, you need to take care of your division. You just said it. I mean, there are greater, you know, there are greater stakes. You know, it's not 18 or 19 games anymore. You play two home series, two away series. There's not a whole lot to it in that regard. So as much as you look at that and say, okay, that's better because you don't have to play the Rays quite as much. You know, you don't have to play the Yankees quite as much, although certainly the Yankees with Aaron Judge being on. But yeah, you look at Toronto, they're coming in. We're looking at this and saying, hey, we're five back of the Orioles. We need to make some hay here. Not that it's over or far from it. I mean, we're still only talking June, but that's the thing. You don't have quite as many head-to-head opportunities, so it makes things that much more important. And it's funny, and we've talked about this before, but where the Orioles are now, considering they've been this legitimately good for about a calendar year now. It was last July when they had they had that winning streak and they really took off. You know, they've played like a 90 plus win team since then. So they're for real. And now all these other teams, whether we're talking the division or other wild card contenders, they're all looking at the Orioles and saying, hey, we've got to play Baltimore. They're really good. So it is fun in that regard. But, you know, something you mentioned as you were kind of talking about as we get into the summer, and we'll talk about the trade deadline plenty, and there's so much that goes into that, but it isn't just that. You said something interesting that you don't need eight starting pitchers. And I understood what you meant by that, that literally you're not going to have eight guys in your rotation, but you do need eight starting pitchers. And how that factors in is, yes, health and effectiveness being a huge part of that. But also you get into September and October, and if you're in a position where you're not scratching and clawing just to get in as the final wild card, but you kind of know you're going to be in, you know, whether you're not even talking about the division. Let's say Tampa wins the division because feels like they're going to win the division. But let's say the Orioles are in that top wild card spot, for example. You start thinking about what October is going to look like. So you want seven or eight starting options. Why? Because then you take your top four and then those other two or three, guess where they go? They go into the bullpen. And suddenly you have Kevin Gausman was for the 2014 Orioles. Go back and look at what he did in the pen for that team. So, you know, that could be Grayson Rodriguez. That could be DL Hall. You know, that could be Kyle Bradish. I mean, again, how it shakes out, we got a long way to go, but you're looking at those spots. And even on the position player side, as much as we've talked about Ryan O'Hearn being a good story and how well he's played, we've talked about Josh Lester, a career journeyman minor leaguer who's gotten a little more than a cup of coffee and he's helped the Orioles win a couple games here. Are those guys going to be around for the rest of the season? If I'm betting, I'm going to say probably not, but that could be a Jordan Westberg stepping into a role. That could be Heston Kerstad, who just got promoted to Norfolk and has looked the part of the second overall pick that the Orioles envisioned when they drafted him before he had the heart issue of the myocarditis and the injuries and everything that derailed him the last couple years. he could be their DH or, part-time first baseman, depending on how Mountcastle's playing, all that. So you've got a lot of guys that factor in, not just as potential trade pieces that could come into the organization, but you still have guys in the minor leagues at the AAA level right now that they could be here in a couple of weeks, or they could be here in July, or they could be here in August, and suddenly they're a really intriguing weapon for you that you haven't had all year, and they make you even better. So that's where the Orioles are in a really exciting position, because you look at the potential to, yes, make trades at the deadline, and I'm not going to back away from advocating for them doing that. But at the same time, they do have some really really interesting internal options still that, boy, they're knocking on the door, and they're knocking loudly at Norfolk. When you're talking about a Colton Cowser, you're talking about Westberg, you hope Grayson Rodriguez, who has pitched pretty well since going back down to Norfolk, as you'd expect, right? He should. You're hoping DL Hall can, refine that command a little bit more to the point where, at the very least, he could be a really intriguing late inning bullpen guy for them later this year. So a lot of options, a lot of excitement, still room for improvement. We're not talking about a team that haven't been playing their best baseball in terms of top to bottom from the lineup or the rotation, let's say. There's some middle relievers that you're still hoping can straighten things out. We've talked about CNL Perez. Michael Givens is on the IL right now. I mean, see what happens with his shoulder and everything. That doesn't sound great right now, but you still have room to get better. And that's what's exciting. It doesn't feel like the Orioles have, we've talked about it a little bit with the bullpen, and that's where I would even say, hey, if you can add another reliever to the mix at the deadline, by all means, an Andrew Miller type addition, like what he did for the Orioles in 14, if you can do that, by all means, do it. But we've talked about the bullpen in terms of maxing out a little bit and how much they've leaned on Batista and Yennier Cano and all that. But in other ways, it feels like there's still a lot of room for this team to get better. And that's what's exciting. You're talking about a team that's 17 over, and you feel that you can point to A, B, and C as far as things that can get better, and they even have options internally, let alone talking about the deadline. That's when you know you have the potential to have a really, not just a fun summer, but potentially a fun autumn. And that's really what this is all about at the end of the day.
A new day in Oriole baseball. Luke Jones is there to chronicle it all at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. I'm going to get the sunshine shot out behind me. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. We'll be at Spirits West next Thursday. We are kicking it off all summer long. We're doing 25 oysters in September to celebrate our 25th anniversary. We'll be kicking it off with the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Window Nation, 86690Nation. We'll be doing that at Costas on August the 3rd. That is our 25th anniversary. It'll be 25 years to the day where we had the basement full of food at the radio station and welcoming people in for the first ever sports radio station. So I'll be spiking the ball on that a little bit on August 3rd. Then on August 4th, we'll be at Drug City, kicking off a month-long celebration in August. And hopefully, healthy football, which we hope we have this week in training camp, as well as bad fake football in August and real baseball happening in August as well. I am Nestor. He is Luke. Make sure you follow him out at Baltimore Luke from Owings Mills to Camden Yards all week long. And you can follow me anywhere the interwebs take you, Ness at BaltimorePositive.com. I am Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.